Hello. Get in the soup, boy.
Kira.
Hi, I'm Rite of Flame on a creature. Maya. And today, it's finally happening.
It's time.
We're doing it. Oh, it's finally here. We are talking about VV Cauldron today. We are introducing our deck spotlight series, where we break down decks across the deck building and gameplay spectrum. We work out exactly how they play. We talk about their matchups, the archetypes, the skill sets, the strengths and weaknesses. And today we are talking about, is it Cauldron, the veritable elephant in the room?
It's a good way to start, because you have to start by talking about the villain of the format.
Exactly, exactly. Everybody loves a villain arc, and I don't think VV ever had a hero arc. It's been villain arc all the way.
No, I think from the moment VV was spoiled, there was a bit of like, you know, and a hush falls across the room, and everyone's just like, uh-oh.
It does, like, it feels like very much a, like, Final Fantasy-style villain. I'm sure that wasn't the intention, but...
Yeah, I don't think Vivi's a villain.
He's just, like, an NPC, right?
Yes, as far as I'm aware. And again, like we said, I've never played Final Fantasy, I don't believe.
Oh, no, neither.
You've never, you know. So, but Vivi, in Magic at least, is currently something of a standard villain.
Yes, my understanding of Vivi from the games is he's just a little guy.
Well, he's just a little guy. He is the key ingredient in soup mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your experience playing with Cauldron then. Does playing with Cauldron feel too strong?
Okay.
So, no answer is answer enough.
It feels... Look, I've played a lot of Is a Cauldron at this point. It's basically all I've been playing on the ladder for the last like month and a half. Pretty much since I put down Pixie post-rotation, I've picked up Cauldron, and it's been really, really good. I will say, it feels weird.
Yeah.
Like, the deck is very clearly too strong, right? But it has a habit of winning games it has no business winning, but it also tends to, like, lose games it has no business losing, right?
Right.
The deck has all the hallmarks right now of a deck that is, like, too strong. But I think the metagame is in the right place to sort of keep it in check, and certainly is developing that way. But yeah, it's funny, because for a deck so powerful, it doesn't feel good to play, right? And this is coming from longtime combo degenerate Mayo.
Combo enjoyer.
Yeah, like, it brings me joy to put Vivi into a soup. But I don't know. It feels... wrong. Not that it's necessarily too easy, but I think the gameplay patterns are just a little bit too clunky to me.
Additionally, as well, in terms of, like, you know, this, you mentioned the hallmarks of a strong deck. It has a significant metagame share. It is dominating the top 8 of events that it's in. It is overwhelmingly the most played deck currently. You know, and that's what we've seen historically. That's what happened with Is It Cutter. That's what's happened in other formats. You know, when Nadu was a force in Modern. It has all of those markings of a deck that is too strong, and it has the price tag of a deck that is too strong.
Yep.
The deck is something like $800, I believe.
How much of that is just VV?
Well, and look, how much of that is just a set of VVs and a set of Cauldrons? Like, it cannot be overstated how expensive the deck is for 8 cards out of your 75. Like, only a little bit more than 10% of your deck is probably somewhere in the realms of 70% of your cost. And it largely is also, and this is a little bit of a tangent, it's also largely because those are both mythics. And mythics that are really well played in the format tend to run away when it comes to price. We saw that happen with Shieldred as well. And so it has the hallmarks of a strong deck. It is a dominant metagame force. It is the most played deck. It is currently the deck to beat, which generally indicates that it's the strongest deck in the format. And so what is the gameplay play like then?
So the thing is, the gameplay patterns felt really weird to me.
I said the trend that I'm noticing is that the deck is weird.
The deck is really weird. At least it is to me. The deck is capable of playing, like, really well on multiple axes, but in order to do it, it requires the execution of, like, all of its different game plans to be a little bit clunky and convoluted.
And what we mean as well when we're saying that the deck is, like, operating on multiple axes, that means it is not only aggressive, but it is controlling, but it is also mid-range. And it has these variety of threats, and it has a different, like a variety of different ways to attack the individual games that it plays. And that's how it, you know, it can move really fast. It can move really aggressively. It can play out a long game. It can go very mid-range. It can go very controlling and move really slow. You know, it operates on so many different planes that it becomes very difficult for one other deck to be able to beat it and to interact with it.
Certainly. And we'll talk a little bit more about the specific gameplay patterns later in the episode. But I want to talk about, A, how to beat it, and I want to talk about the deck list itself, because I think once we talk about the specific cards and how they interact with each other, the gameplay patterns will become more clear. So in order to beat it, I will say the deck is clunky. You can beat it, and most of the time you do that by punishing them when they stumble. The deck is, for the most part, reasonably inclined to stumble. Or rather, the deck is mana intensive, right? There are a lot of individual cards that have high mana demands, things like Glacial Dragonfire, things like Winter Night Stories, things like Stock Up. It really does want to tap out on turns 1, 2, and 3. So if you have a way to disrupt that sort of pattern, it is reasonably easy to close out a game relatively quickly, especially if they don't have the redundant pieces in Vivi or Cauldron. So oftentimes, one of the better ways to deal with it is a disruptive, aggressively slanted deck, something like Dimir Midrange. But we'll get to that in a moment. I would like to talk about the deck list.
Yeah, it's so gross to look at. It just, this deck is, like, and also from just a deck perspective, it's so, so brilliant in a way. The way that a lot of cards synergize with each other is just fantastic. The combo of, you know, I'm spoiling because you're about to just name all these cards, but the combination of things like Marauding Mako, Fear of Missing Out, and Prof's Eidetic Memory alone, oh my gosh, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful, and it just makes me want to throw up.
Yeah, it's amazing. I feel a little bit like I did prophesize the advent of this deck, like before Final Fantasy happened, in talking about a non-Oculus, like blue-red Prof's Eidetic Memory deck. But
so this is your fault.
Sure, yeah. I take 100% responsibility. As a matter of fact, if we want to fix this problem, everybody just send me their copies of Vivi or Nidia, and yeah, I will make sure that they don't circulate back into the wider Magic economy. But yes, so the core of the deck is Agatha Soul Cauldron, Vivi or Nidia, Marauding Mako, Fear of Missing Out, Prof's Eidetic Memory, Winter Night Stories, and Into the Floodmoor. What a pile of cards. It's really interesting because it's a really high synergy core, and it has a very, like, multifaceted approach to the game. It has a very strong combo plan. Like, when you think of Vivi Cauldron, you think, oh, combo deck. But it also has this really strong, really resilient, like, large aggro plan. Not, like, very aggressive one drop, very aggressive two drop lightning bolt, but, you know, slightly larger one drop, slightly larger two drop that has an aggressive effect in Fear of Missing Out, and a way to make your creatures bigger and more resilient and refill. It is extremely high synergy, but also each individual card is very strong. Vivi or Nidia, even by itself, very strong card. Marauding Mako, very strong. Fear of Missing Out, I would argue, one of the contenders for best card in the format. There are so many individually extremely powerful cards that the fact that they synergize so well with each other on top of it makes this, like, central core very, very scary. Then you have the flex slots.
So this deck is flexible.
Flexible. These are the slots that you will take in and out depending on what you expect the metagame to be, whether you want to smoothen up the, like, synergy of your deck, or whether you want to lean into dealing with specific elements of the format. So these cards are Glacial Dragonfire, Stock Up, Torch the Tower, Steam Core Scholar, Abrade, Tursa Lightshatter, Opt, Draco Nordic's Engineer, Giralf the Fleshrite, and Fire Magic, amongst others. I do feel like you can put any card that is blue and or red in this deck, and it will probably be just fine. Aside from maybe Pinnacle Emissary. I don't think you're getting very far with that. The flex slots are filled when you build this deck with whatever high-impact individual cards the meta calls for, right? So you have Tursa and Skiddingle Scholar to shore up mid-rangey matchups or any matchup where there's a lot of removal. One of the ways this deck can lose is if you, like, just cast a Lightning Bolt every time they play a creature, right? If they don't have any creatures to put plus one counters on, they can't combo off. And it's also their secondary game plan, which is turning a large Fear of Missing Out sideways twice. Stock Up obviously solidifies the more controlling matchups, or the matchups against slower and less popular mid-range decks. So it's really good against, obviously, things like Black-Green or things like the green-white Bright Glass Clear Hulk mid-range decks. Torch the Tower and Abraid help with the smaller creature decks and the Mirror, and also help with things like Otters, which is a real force in today's metagame. And then, of course, you have Opt, Glacial Dragonfire, and Draconautics Engineer to sort of, like, smooth out your draws and allow for a quicker combo with VV. Generally speaking, the gameplay and the play patterns of this deck are very hard to distill down to one. But I do kind of want to talk about the two most common, like, play patterns that you see when you play this deck. Or at least what it feels like to me. The first one I am fondly calling the Resilient Tempo deck. The first step is sort of to deploy one or two cheap threats. These are your Marauding Makos is the easiest one to think about. But also, like, your Fear of Missing Out, or your Steam Core Scholars, or even if you're feeling a little bit spicy, you can pop a VV out there. It's probably fine. Some versions...
Put him in front of the tree and let him just get run over if he wants.
Exactly. I mean, well, if they don't answer him, you win.
Also, VV in the graveyard is actually where everyone wants the VV to be.
It's true. And, like, some versions are playing Astrologian's Planisphere. You play some cheap incidental threats. Step B is deploy a Fear of Missing Out. Like I said, this card, busted. Ridiculous. We could do an entire episode on how messed up Fear of Missing Out is as a card. Step C is use Prosidetic Memory plus Winter Night Stories or Steam Core Scholar to provide really consistent pressure while still maintaining card advantage. And this is the really messed up part of this element of the tempo deck, is that oftentimes when you're playing against the tempo deck, if you are able to answer their first couple of threats in between their permission and their removal, you'll win the game because they will peter out. The issue with the VV deck, when it is playing a tempo game plan, though, is that they never run out of threats because all their threats draw them three cards.
Yeah.
And all their threats are actually just 1/1s, but Prosthetic Memory means that they're 17/17s. So you better have very specific, very unconditional removal if you want to deal with a VV combo board state. Or a VV tempo board state, sorry.
Every Magic card is better when it says draw a card on it.
I mean, yeah, and there is no better demonstration of that than this. Step D is use removal spells of choice and Into the Floodmoor to remove problematic permanents while getting Delirium. And Delirium is actually important in this deck, and it is not as easy to get as it seems. That's why Winter Night Stories in particular is a really important part of this deck, because it does allow you to, oftentimes, when casting Winter Night Stories, I will elect to discard two cards, including a creature card, to fuel Delirium for the Fear of Missing Out. Because the synergistic relationship between Fear of Missing Out and Prophesiedetic Memory is really strong, that extra attack often equates to three or four additional plus one counters, especially if you've resolved a Winter Night Stories on your Fear of Missing Out or on the creature that is attacking and attacking twice with your Fear of Missing Out. It is worth noting that the card Fear of Missing Out almost single-handedly makes this a viable strategy. If your VV opponent is very clearly going all in on this sort of, like, tempo strategy, a really good idea is just to kill all the Fear of Missing Outs. If you kill all the Fear of Missing Outs, the deck becomes a lot worse and a lot more manageable. It will still kill you eventually, but you have a lot of time to piece together a win through its sort of, like, overwhelming card advantage tempo game plan. This game plan, generally speaking, is good against other creature decks where they won't have time to set up their combo. Being the bigger aggro deck wins you most games most of the time in an aggro mirror, and that's just sort of enough, especially if the aggro decks aren't playing the sort of cheap interactive spells that you would need to play in order to get around, say, a 6/7.
The loss of Monstrous Rage is really noticeable here for aggro decks against VV.
Certainly, because nothing blocks quite as well as a Steam Core Scholar with two counters on it. Big scary. The other game plan for this deck is kind of obviously the linear combo deck. You use card selection tools to sculpt a hand that'll kill your opponent all at once. Then you use cards like Fear of Missing Out to create a must interact with threat while leveraging the ability to set up your combo through discarding things like BVs and Draconautix Engineers. Then you kind of create a board state where they must spend mana and cards to interact on their turn in order to not lose. So this is typically done through Prophylactic Memory and Fear of Missing Out, but can also just be done through either a large Marauding Mako or some zombie tokens that you've created off like a Ralph the Flesh Rite. Just a board state that needs to be interacted with. And then once they interact with it, they will have a limited amount of mana and resources on the turn that you choose to combo off on. And then you combo off all at once. This is usually with some combination of Soul Cauldron, Marco, Winter Night Stories, Drelf to like make either an insurmountable board state or a one-turn kill if you're playing the Draconautix Engineer, which, by the way, I think you should be. It's worth noting that it is very important to choose the turn that you want to kill on. It is easy to sort of like set up a pseudo-interesting board state where you can either overcommit into your tempo plan or you can hold back for your combo plan and force them to interact. Choosing the turn you want to kill them on is an important way of working out whether or not you want to overcommit to a tempo game plan if you need to kill them quickly, or whether you have the time to force them to interact. This is a big kind of back and forth play pattern, especially in the Dimir mid-range matchup, where they do have a high density of interactive spells.
This deck is very, like, everything everywhere all at once. You know what I mean? Like, it's very, has every answer that you can think of. It can go wide or it can go tall, and it can kill you all in one turn. It's a very, very scary deck, no matter what axis it's kind of, like, angled on.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit, actually, of the Is It Cori Steelcutter decks in Modern, where if you have a look at it, it is a prowess deck. So, you know, it's looking to turn a bunch of creatures sideways. But it also just, like, incidentally has this game plan where it can plot a few Slickshot show-offs and, like, cast a few Cori Steelcutters just, like, incidentally, and then kill you all in one turn by going Monastery Swift Spear, Monastery Swift Spear, trigger my Steelcutter, trigger my Steelcutter, cast my two birds. Mutagenic growth, lava dart, sacrifice a mountain, lava dart, you're dead.
Yeah.
Right? It has the ability to fight you on the board, and it has the ability to fight you in the hand. We will fight them on the board. We will fight them on the hand.
The Winston Churchill of standard matchups.
This thing is so scary.
Well, then what are the matchups themselves like?
Okay. So, like most combo decks, I have good news. This deck will fold to a more efficient disruption plus clock game plan, right? If you are attacking them and you are also countering their spells, they are screwed. Its worst matchups then are these efficient disruption and clock mid-range decks like Dimir mid-range and actually a lot of the Oculus variants.
Huh.
It is very hard for this deck to beat Oculus into counterspell. Also, decks that can run you out of threats are very, very scary. So Azorius Control can often be pretty bad if you have not got the sideboard or you have not got the natural deck configuration to sort of beat it. Against these like Azorius Control decks, the VV deck's best option is to go all at once for a combo plan, but that means one or two well-timed pieces of interaction on the side of the Azorius Control player can really do a lot of damage. And that's sort of how the game plan interacts. Either the Cauldron player sculpts for several turns and then tries to go off all at once and is able to do so through two or three pieces of key interaction, or they're not able to do so because of a well-timed counterspell or a well-timed removal spell. The combo engine falls apart, and then the next turn, the Azorius Control player untaps and casts an Elspeth. This deck's best matchups, like the Overlord's deck of old, is the other category. So we're talking mono-green counters, mono-white tokens, Ores of Sacrifice, Gruul Delirium, any deck that is not actively interacting with your pieces in a very targeted way is going to be an absolute field day for VV Cauldron. The reason being that it has two robust game plans that are good against most other gameplay styles. If you really want to beat Vivi and you're happy to play just for that matchup, you can definitely beat this deck, even playing a, you know, an other deck. Like, this deck really struggles to beat the blue-black control deck that's trying to mill you out, right? It's just quite hard. They have the right interaction. They have the right counter spells. But anything that's proactive, Vivi's just going to beat because it's quicker. This deck is at its best when you build your high-impact one or two ofs to wreak havoc on specific high meta share matchups. When you get to play your stock up in a field full of control, you feel really good. Yeah.
When your stock up is not eaten up by a No More Lies, we're feeling good.
Yeah, absolutely. And with its diversity of game plans, VV Cauldron is well equipped to deal with most decks that aren't highly tuned or hyper efficient. So some well-targeted flex slots can really make or break this deck's metagame matchups.
It's a good deck. Deck sucks.
Yeah. Look.
Both things can be true. Deck can be good. Deck can suck.
TLDR, this deck's really strong. It's got a really dependable core. It can adjust to most metagames to be a dominant player. It's a great deck if you don't have perfect format knowledge, because it has really high raw power, and with a bit of practice with your execution, it should have game against basically everything.
We'll say, though, high skill ceiling again. Like, I think this is... Sorry, high skill floor.
And
I
high
think,
skill ceiling.
And high skill ceiling. This, again, very similar to Overlords. Like, a lot of the best decks of their era tend to be high skill ceiling, high skill floor. And I don't think this is an exception to that rule. The interactions between things like, you know, understanding how to get FOMO, you know, your fear of missing out to Delirium in a deck that really only has one artifact, couple of enchantments, instance and source, really difficult to get it there. You know, you don't have planeswalkers in this deck. You don't, you know, it can be...
No battles here, baby.
No battles. Like, the number of card types in this deck is actually severely limited. So FOMO, while being a great card and one of the key cards in the deck, really difficult to get it online. And understanding, like you said, knowing how to use a Winter Night Stories properly, when to actually, you know, willingly discard that extra card to trigger Delirium or get closer to Delirium, really important. This deck is not what I would consider, while having a very straightforward game plan, is not very straightforward execution.
I totally agree. And look, I have played a lot of combo decks in my time. It is perhaps one of the things I enjoy doing most in life. And I will say that this deck is maybe one of the most complicated combo decks I have ever played. Not because you have to think about all these like really convoluted lines in the same way that you did with a like Legacy Storm deck. And not because the matchups are bad, like something like an Ad Nauseam deck. But because its combo turns are really clunky. Because you need to work out, if you flashback this Winter Night Stories, tapping your Marauding Mako, do you have to add mana from your second VV activation on a VV with a counter on it and an Agatha's Soul Cauldron? Because that matters a lot of the time, right? There's a lot of small moving pieces to keep track of that are on board in the execution that is really difficult even if you're playing this deck in an online format like an arena. I hate to think what this deck would be like to play in paper.
Yeah.
I think Vivi is a very strong deck, and strong enough that it is going to stick around for as long as it or Soul Cauldron are in the format. So, bans notwithstanding, buckle in for the ride to 2027, folks. With all that said, that is all that we have for you today. We look forward to seeing you again next week. New episodes release on Mondays at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Until then, you can keep track of all our releases at RaiseMTG on both Instagram and Blue Sky. You can find Kira on the same platforms at kirabobira.jpg on Instagram and kirabobira on Blue Sky. You can find myself at MayaMTG on both platforms. A big thank you to the State Library of Victoria for the ongoing use of their space. And until next week, remember,
when darkness veils the world, four warriors of light shall come.